Page 8, well, that's if you're using one of the Bibles in the seats in front of you, page 8. But Genesis chapter 12 is where we're going to be. Genesis chapter 12, for me, that's on page 8. And if you're using one of our Bibles here that's in the seats in front of you, it's on page 8. I'd like to welcome you back to week 2 of our new series. I didn't expect to take a one-week break 1 week into my series, but that's just the way it worked out. So I'm going to try to get you caught back up on what we talked about a couple of weeks ago in case you weren't here. We've just started a new series called Just Step Out, and during this series, we're going to be taking a close look at the spiritual journey of someone who can adequately be described as a faith pioneer. And that person's name, that pioneer's name, was Abram. It seems, if you look at Abram's backstory, that he was living a pretty comfortable life when God decided to show up and to speak with him for what we believe is the first time, at least it's the first time recorded here in this text. Now, his life was not going maybe the way he had expected. His father had recently died, which probably was very rough for him, but we know that what that meant is that now he has taken the role of the patriarch of the family. All of the rights and the privileges and responsibilities of being the dad in the family has now passed on to him. And this family apparently is somewhat of a wealthy family. So he's got stuff, he's got resources, he's got possessions. Not only that, but he's his own boss. He has nobody else telling him what to do, and I'm sure he has plans to expand on his own personal empire. We all make plans for his life, and I'm sure Abraham was no exception. But then God decided to step in and interrupt all those plans. And God comes, of course, as God often does, with an offer that Abram almost certainly should have refused. And here's the offer. Abram, I want you to leave everything you've ever known. I want you to step out into the unknown with me. I know you don't know me yet, but come on over with me on this adventure. If you come with me on this adventure, Abram, I promise you, I'm going to do some miracles for you. I'm going to give you a future that you can't even imagine today. In fact, here's just a little sample of what's to come. If you come with me on this journey off into the unknown, with no guarantee of how it's going to turn out, I'm going to make sure you become a great nation, and I'm going to make sure, Abram, that you end up impacting every single family in the entire earth. All you have to do, Abram, to get these benefits is step out. You have to take a risk, Abram, and you have no guarantee that it's going to turn out the way you want it to. You need to sacrifice what's familiar and what's comfortable for a greater payoff that's to come someday in the future. And I told you guys 2 weeks ago, after seeing that offer on the table, if it were me, I'm not honest 100% sure what I would have done. I'd like to think I would have taken it, but I'm not sure I would have. Because honestly, this offer is a lot for God to ask of Abram, isn't it? It's everything. It's his whole life. It's his whole future. And it's a lot for Abram to risk. He can't keep safe in this journey. He's got to go and do whatever God asks him to do. Now, I haven't had it happen to me exactly the way it happened to Abram, but I can tell you this. I've been on the receiving end of God's disruptions to my familiar, comfortable life. I've had a lot of times where I've sensed God calling me out into the unknown. And I'll be real with you, the track record that I can share with you, it's kind of spotty. Sometimes I'll step out into the unknown, and sometimes I stay where I feel like it's safe. That's just my story and what I'm trying to learn and grow from. Honestly, as I read about Abram, I'm absolutely blown away by Abram's willingness to just take that bold leap off into the darkness. Now, we speculated that maybe the reason he was willing to take that risk is because he knew something about his familiar, comfortable life, and he knew that it really wasn't all that it was cracked up to be. That actually maybe the familiar, comfortable life that he had gotten used to, maybe it was just a dead end. So maybe he saw that the only smart thing was to leap out into the darkness and hope for a miracle, because staying where he was wasn't going to lead him where he wanted to go. And if you think about it, when you're choosing between a lottery ticket's chance of success and certain loss, the lottery ticket all of a sudden starts to make sense. Or maybe, just maybe, there was something about that encounter with God that shook him up enough to convince him that it was worth it to step out. And that's what I want to focus on this morning. Now, come along with me on a little journey here. I imagine that some of you have been to a job interview at some point in your life. I'll never forget the first one I went on, I was terrified, right? Didn't know what to expect. What were they going to ask me? Am I going to get the job? I don't know. I'm a bundle of nerves, bundle of energy. Now, if you've ever been on a job interview like I have, and since then many times, right, you will understand, right, the power of a first impression, both a good first impression and the power of a bad first impression, all right? Many times, and we don't want to admit this because we all think we're open-minded until we get really pressed on it. Many times, our first interaction with somebody sets the expectations, right, for all future interactions that we have with these people. So, for example, you show up to your job interview 15 minutes late with bedhead, bloodshot eyes, wearing your pajamas. It is unlikely that you are going to be taken very seriously by the person conducting the interview. In fact, I can guarantee you something. They're going to come to conclusions about what kind of a person you are simply from what they learn about you in those first few minutes. And if it's a bad first impression, let me tell you, it is incredibly difficult, or in some cases impossible, to change it later, no matter how hard you work to overcome that first impression. Or, let's bring this to a reality place of terror for guys especially. You're going out on a first date. If you spend the entire time on your date talking about how great you are, if you spend all the time on your date just simply ignoring the person on the other side of the table because you're nervous to talk to them, if you have horrible bad breath, you often don't get a second chance to prove what a wonderful person you really are, because that first impression makes a difference. It's a powerful, powerful thing. And I believe, at least in part, this concept explains why Abram decided to step out in faith instead of stay home where it was safe and secure and comfortable. I think Abram learned something about God in that first encounter with God that made such a big impression upon him that he decided, you know what? If I'm going over there with that person, I want to go. I'm going to go over the edge into the dark, step into the unknown, because wow, this first impression I think was that impressive. Now, I think it's important for us to learn what Abram learned about God. Because here's what I want to promise you. I think I can do this on steady ground here. I want to promise you that you can count on the fact that God is going to walk up to you at some point, introduce himself to you, and interrupt your life with a similar invitation. It's just the kind of God he is, and it's just what he does. In fact, this is going to blow your minds. You deciding to fight through the horrible snowstorm out there to get here today might actually be your personal interruption that God has designed for you. And what you're going to need to decide in that moment, whether it's today or later or in 10 years or whenever, you're going to have to decide if you're ready to accept his invitation or say thanks but no thanks. And I think that if you learn what Abram learned about this God who just interrupted your life, it's going to help you make the decision. So, what did Abram learn about God that tipped the scales in God's favor? Let's just read the passage, and I'll try to point out three different things that I think Abram learned about God in that first encounter, made that first impression that enabled Abram to step out in faith, even though it was scary. Let's read, I'm going to read this, you follow along. Chapter 12, at the bottom of page 8, you see the big, big bold letters, or bold numbers 12. This is where I'm going to start to read. It says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a," what? "Blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse," and listen to this one, this will blow your mind, "and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Let me just pause there, because I see a few things in this very first encounter with God that Abram, I think, understood. It helped him make his decision that we need to understand, maybe help you make your decision. Here's the first thing. If you're following along in your notes, there's some blanks. If you're not a notes person, you can just ignore and just listen and interact that way. Here's the first thing that you need to know about God, that Abram learned about God, that helped him decide if he was going to go off into the unknown with this God. Number one, God likes to recruit. God likes to recruit. Okay, I mean this in two different ways. You'll notice some subnotes there. Here's one of the things I mean when I say that God likes to recruit. Number one, God always takes the initiative. God takes the initiative. In other words, God doesn't wait for Abram to stumble around in the dark and look and find God. God goes out of his way, doesn't he, to seek Abram out, and then to make him this very ridiculous and crazy offer. Okay? God doesn't sit there in heaven or somewhere and say, gee, I sure hope Abram comes to find me. We know in the text, God went looking for somebody who was not looking for him, and he brought it and dropped it in his lap. God always takes the initiative. We know from Joshua 24, we saw 2 weeks ago, that Abram grew up worshiping other gods. He had his life set up. He was fine. He was doing his own thing. And as far as we know, this is their very first conversation ever. See, friends, you got to understand this about God. God likes to recruit. God isn't content to sit passively waiting for someone to knock on his door and ask for help. Okay? God is on the move. God is going to people. God is offering his help to us even when we don't know we need it. That's just who he is. God always makes the first move. He's the one that chooses to come to us instead of waiting passively for us to find our way to him. But I also mean this recruiting thing in a second way. So number one, God always takes the initiative. God goes first. God comes to find us. There's a story in the New Testament. Jesus compares God to a shepherd who goes off looking for a lost sheep. He doesn't stand with the safe sheep inside the sheep pen and say, hey, lost sheep, if you ever want to find your way back, I'm here. I might open the door and let you back in. No, the shepherd leaves the safe sheep in the sheep pen. He goes out to find the one who's lost. God takes the initiative. But I also mean God likes to recruit in a second way. Number two, or letter B if you prefer. God doesn't force you to choose him. God does not force you to choose him. Did you notice that in this, God gives Abram the freedom to say thanks, but no thanks? God appears, he offers this invitation, he lays out the blessings if he accepts the invitation, and then he steps back to see what Abram is going to choose. Now, I know that God knew what Abram was going to choose. I'm not saying that he didn't know. But what I'm saying is, God didn't do what I do as a parent. When I lay out a choice for my kids, and the way I present the choice, I let them know that if they don't choose it, they are in huge trouble, right? God says, look, I've got this crazy idea, Abram. Leave everything, jump out into the unknown, and if you do, I'll take care of you. And then God does this. He doesn't guilt trip him. He doesn't scream at him. He doesn't cause fire to fall from heaven to intimidate him. He shows Abram enough respect to give him what I call the dangerous gift of freedom. That blows my mind. Why in the world? The Bible tells us, right? If you read the Bible claims, and this is something that's hard for us to grapple with, the Bible claims that God knows what is best in every situation. That's what the Bible tells us. The Bible tells us that God is literally the only one who has the capacity to see the big picture of life. And because of that, he's the only one who knows what is the right thing to do in every situation. And not just for you and you and you, he knows what's best for you and then everybody that's affected by your decision that you have to make. He can process that all at one time. It blows my mind, and the Bible calls it wisdom. God is the source of all wisdom. He knows what is best. And here's the crazy thing. The Bible also claims that God has the power to do anything he wants to do. You know, like this crazy idea that everybody wants you to think is stupid, that he could actually create the entire universe in 6 days. So if he has that much wisdom, he knows what's best, and he has that much power, he can do what needs to be done, then a little tiny puny human like you, like me, how much wisdom do you have on that wisdom scale? I've got this much, and God is the infinite line stretching in both directions. So he's going to give me, a puny little human, with this much wisdom and even less power to get stuff done, he's going to give me the choice to say no thanks? I think I'd do it better this way. And yet that's exactly what God does. And the crazy thing is, he knows that when we say, no thanks, I'd rather take care of myself over here, that God knows that's a horrible plan. It's going to blow up in your face. I mean, if you had all the wisdom and all the power and this puny human says, no thanks, wouldn't you be tempted to use a little bit of that power to force that puny human to do what's best for themselves? Some of us parent that way. I know I struggle with it every day. Child, I know what's best for you, therefore you will not choose, you will do. And while that gives me short-term successes and I can feel good about my parenting, I'm not training anybody to take care of themselves when I'm gone, when I do it that way. So why instead would God choose to give Abram the freedom and you and I the freedom to choose whether or not we're going to follow him into the unknown? Why not just take away their freedom? Just a little bit of it. Just take it away a little bit. It's for their own good. I think I have a reason why. And I think you have them in your notes there. Why did God give us the dangerous gift of freedom? I think it's because of this. Fill in the blanks if you wish. God wants partners, not slaves. God wants partners, not slaves. Let me try to explain what I mean by that. You see, God is a completely free being. He's free. Nobody, listen to me, it doesn't work. Don't try. Nobody can compel God to do something he does not wish to do. He is immovable. He is intractable. He is completely free of any obligation to anybody to do anything. But here's the crazy thing. He's a free being who desires to have free relationships with other free beings. That's what he wants. He wants that kind of interaction that you can have between two free people. Okay? If you have all the power and the person you're in a relationship has to do what you say, guess what? That is not called a relationship. It's just not. It certainly is not love. Love requires freedom. And so I think that's why God gave us freedom. Even though he knew we would use that freedom to do wickedly, horribly stupid things. Because here's the deal. Without freedom, there can be no love. There just can't be. If you're not free to choose not to love me, whatever you're doing towards me may look like love, but it's not truly love. God wanted people who are going to love him, not just obey him. Don't you realize God could compel us to obey him in a heartbeat? How easy would that be when you created the universe in 6 days to get you to finally get your act together? God could do it in a heartbeat, a snap of his fingers. And yet he chooses a different path. Because he doesn't just want people, robots, following through the motions, doing what he says. He wants people who will love him. See, God, okay, we underestimate, I think, how much God wants a relationship with us. We just underestimate that. Maybe we take it for granted or we just don't think it through, but here's the deal. God recruits us because he wants to win your heart so that when you step out, you're stepping out because you want to, not stepping out because you're afraid of what will happen to you if you stay back over here. He wants you to take his hand willingly and join him on this crazy adventure he has planned for you. That's what he wants. God is not a bully. God is not a bully. He doesn't force himself on you. He insists on knocking at your door and recruiting you, pleading with you, calling you. And he's insistent sometimes. He doesn't just go away when you say no thanks. He keeps knocking, but he doesn't beat the door down. If you say, and this is the scary, scary, scary part. It is possible if you say no long enough that he'll even stop knocking. That's a scary place you never want to get to. Because here's the deal. If he did anything other than that, God would rob us of our freedom, and I think it would make it, therefore, impossible for him to get what he most wants from us. And that is not just your obedience. It's not just you getting in line. It's not just you doing what he tells you to do like he's some kind of dictator. What he most wants from us is freely given love and trust. And I think Abram understood that in the way God approached him. If you're this God and you have all this power, why don't you just make me do it? And God says, no, you choose. What do you want to do? I'm going to recruit. And I would love for you to come. Oh my goodness, life is good over here. Life's going to be horrible if you stay where you are, Abram. It's not going to be what life could be, but it's your choice. So, first thing, I think, is that God likes to recruit. Second thing, and this one's going to seem like I'm contradicting the first, but hey, I'm a preacher. I make things confusing. That's just what I do. Number two, God thinks he's in charge. God thinks he's in charge. Can I read verses 1-3 again? Verse 1 says, now the Lord said to Abram, I have a suggestion to make. I would think it would be great. In fact, it would be really swell of you, Abram, if you could maybe take a weekend. Could you just go on a little trip, take a road trip for a few days off into the wilderness, and then when it gets uncomfortable, you can come back and everything will be fine. All I'm asking is for a couple of hours of your time. Is that the way he frames the discussion? I know, I did a nasty preacher trick. Look at verse 1 again. Let's read it the way it's written. Now the Lord said to Abram, go. Catch that? It's a command. Go. Go from your country, from your kindred, from your father's house, to the land I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Friends, you cannot read those verses without realizing that the God who is making the invitation believes he has a right to do it. Believes that he has a right to demand you step out into the unknown. He believes that he's in charge and that he has the right to make the invitation, and he believes he has a right to be trusted by Abram. Because apparently the way it works is this. We have freedom to either opt into God's plan or opt out of God's plan, but once we're in, we are not free to push some new amended plan onto God and say, this is what I will agree to. And then manipulate him to doing things the way we want him to. Abram didn't come to God with some kind of counter offer. Like, okay, I know you want me to leave my father's country, but what if I just go 2 weeks a year and then every other weekend? That's not what he did. He said, this is the deal. Go. Leave everything behind. Start over with me or stay where you are. It's an either or kind of thing. My way, Abram, or your way? Because here's the deal. God definitely wants partners, but here's the deal. We're not equal partners. Okay? We don't get to be in charge. We don't get to tell God what to do. If we want in his plan, then we get in on his terms, not our terms. And this is where we stumble. Because a lot of us would like a little bit of Jesus in our lives. Everybody wants a little bit of Jesus. Jesus was a nice guy. He patted kids on the head and healed sick people. He said nice things that are really good for internet memes. Okay? I can look really clever if I just quote a nicely chosen phrase from Jesus from time to time. It's nice to have a little bit of Jesus in your life. I'll tell you what's not nice is turning over the complete control of your life to another person. That's not nice at all. Because he's going to ask you to do some crazy, crazy stuff. Some sacrificial stuff that's going to hurt to obey. If we want in, we got to get on his terms, not ours. Now, how do we know that God thinks he's in charge? I have two ways that we can tell that God thinks he's in charge. Number one, or letter A if you prefer, God makes extreme demands. His demands are unconditional. Leave it all behind. There's no negotiation. Here's the deal, Abram. Take it or leave it. And we need to know that about God. And it's a harsh message maybe, but I think it's a true message. God doesn't want 50% of your life. He doesn't even want you to push the needle just past 50 so that he is slightly more important than any other thing in your life. He's really not even interested in 3/4 of your heart. He wants the whole deal. He wants it all. And he's not signing you up for a year-to-year temporary contract where every year you get to decide if there's a better offer out there. This year I'm going to step out into the unknown, but next year maybe it'll be a better offer to come back to where it's safe and secure. God doesn't play like that. He's like, look, this is a lifetime contract, man. You want in? You want in? I can give that to you, but you've got to, and I love God. God goes big, right? God doesn't ask for some tiny little thing that's easy to give. He asks us for everything because he thinks he deserves it. He thinks he's worthy of it. And he doesn't apologize for it either. He doesn't say, gee, I'm really sorry. This is going to be really rough for you at times. He says, no, look, I deserve 100% of your trust. I deserve your devotion. And God acts like it in the way he makes demands of us. So yeah, God thinks he's in charge. But here's the good side of that, the flip side of that. God makes extreme promises too. You notice that the promises he gives to Abram are not teeny tiny little promises. I'll open up a parking space for you next time you go to Hobby Lobby. I'll make your kids take an extra long nap today so that you can do something for yourself. The promises God makes are not reasonable promises. They're crazy. They're unrealistic. They're impossible. They are miraculous. He talks to a barren couple that are too old to have kids and tells them, you're not just going to have a kid. You are going to give birth over time to an innumerable nation. Go count the stars, Abram. We're going to get to that story later. Go look up in the sky. Count the stars. And he goes, 1, 2, skip a few, 5 million, and he's done, right? God's like, if you can count how many stars, that's how many descendants you're going to have. He said that to a barren couple too old to have kids. God's promises are crazy and extreme. It's undeniable, friends, that God makes promises with the absolute confidence in his own ability to come through for us. Like, I don't promise crazy stuff to my kids. I try really hard not to do that. Even if it makes them happy in the moment, because I know what? I got to show up and put up later, or else they're never going to trust me again. God comes at us with crazy promises. Because he knows he can come through. He knows he's going to come through. He talks to this nobody and he says, yeah, I can give you a great name. Yeah, I can make you a great nation. Yeah, I can touch every family on earth through you. I'm incredibly capable of that. I'm that wise and I'm that strong. So before you jump into a relationship with God, you need to know that he's a God of extremes, okay? God doesn't want some kind of a surfacey, shallow, Facebook-type relationship where you just kind of hook up with him from time to time and then go your separate ways when it gets a little too uncomfortable. He's looking for a life-changing commitment from you. One in which you are going to follow him into the darkness as if he's in charge because, oh, by the way, he is. I think sometimes we want the benefits of a relationship with God, but we still want to maintain control of it. We don't want God the way he actually is. We want to shrink wrap him down into a size that's more manageable for us. Abram learned really quickly God was going to have none of that. He realized that God was in charge and that their relationship, though it was a real relationship, it's a two-way street, it's reciprocal, their relationship would never be a relationship of equals. And I think this knowledge that God thinks he's in charge really impacted his decision to step out into that future. One last thing, I'm going to let you go home. Don't worry, I'm not preaching 2 sermons because I missed one last week. It's just one. Number three, what did Abram learn about God in this first encounter that he needed to know? Number three, God focuses on the future. Future. As God makes this deal with Abram that I've read for you a few times now, check this out. all the rewards for Abram's trust are going to be given to Abram a long time into the future. Did you catch that? God doesn't come with 10% down, promising to pay the other 90% at some later time. God comes to Abram and says, hey, look, 100% of the payoff is over there, not here today. Let's just go one at a time. Great nation. Do you know how long it took for that to come true? Literally hundreds of years to the time when they're in Egypt and they multiply to being a great nation. How about this one? You will be blessed. That's going to be in the future. Your name will be great. Nobody knew who Abram was when he was alive, mostly. But we know it now. Guess how many years ago that was? Thousands of years ago. God has made his name great over time. Those who bless you will be blessed. Well, that's only going to happen, will be, future tense. You will bless all the families of the earth. Now, spoiler alert, how is Abram going to bless all the families of the earth? Come to find out, one of Abram's descendants is going to be in a position to rescue all the families of the earth from their devastatingly horrible separation from God. And that descendant's name would be Jesus. Jesus didn't show up for like 2,000 years after this point. Every single promise is in the future. Now, if I were God, I would have sweetened the deal just a little bit. I would say this, here's the deal. I'm going to give you 3 miracle kids right now. Like, add some water, poof, there they are, right? And then, tell you what, I'm going to pay you in kids to the tune of about $2 million over the next, say, 400 years or so. And when they're in Egypt someday, you know, you'll be able to see that. Here's a little down payment, Abram. Here's some proof in the present that the rest of it's going to come later in the future. That's what I would do. But obviously, I don't have all the wisdom because God didn't do that. God makes these crazy promises. They're not going to come true for years, for decades, for centuries, for millennia. Abram has zero proof in his hands that it's all going to just work out. You know what he has in his hands to hold on to? One thing. Promises. It's like going to a bank and asking for a $1 million loan and you have no collateral. You're a homeless person off the street. You walk into a bank. I've got a great business idea. I need $1 million. The bank is going to laugh you out of the room. But that's how God makes deals. Most of the time. When God comes to us and when he interrupts us, he often comes to us with nothing more than promises in his hands. See, because when we see God, you know what we want him to do? Give me an immediate fix for this thing right now. I've got a problem, and I need your help, and I need some kind of a down payment now to make sure I can trust you for the rest of it. I want my signing bonus. When a professional athlete, a lot of times in the NFL especially, when he's making a contract, he makes a deal with his employers. They say, we'll pay you this signing bonus to sign on the dotted line. You get $2 million now, and over the next 3 years, we'll pay you $15 million or something like that. But he needs that $2 million as proof that you're going to pay the rest. We approach God like that. God, where's my signing bonus? My marriage is in trouble, God. If you fix it for me, maybe then I'll step out for you. And God says, uh-uh, that's not how it works. You step out, and then you trust me to fix your marriage. God, my finances are a wreck right now. Here's what I need you to do. I need you to fix my finances, and if you fix my finances, I'll step out on all the other stuff. And God goes, I'm sorry, it's not how it works. You step out, and you trust me to organize your finances over time. God, I've got these addictions. I don't know what to do. If you could just make them go away and stop this craving, then I'll step out. God says, no, no, no. You're not listening to me, apparently. You're not paying attention. Step out first and trust me to conquer your addictions over time. Now, sometimes God does that miraculously in a moment, but that's not the norm, friends. And it's certainly not something we can come to God with some kind of a requirement or some kind of demand. He owes us, I know this is hard. You don't hear this many places. God doesn't owe you anything. You don't deserve anything from him. Now, in his love, he wants to give it to you, but he says it's in the future. and I need you to trust me first. Trust me. Why does God do it this way? Because he wants us to learn how to trust him. Now, this is where it really gets tough. And this is why many people never do it. But friends, the reason God does it this way is because trust is an absolutely indispensable part of the working out of God's plan. And friends, this is the hard reality. Teenagers, you guys need to know this as you're deciding what to do with your life. Trust isn't trust without a little bit of risk. Or I would say, without a lot of risk. As Paul said, see it on the screen here, right? On the wall. We walk by faith, not by sight. And I know it's only a few words that God shares with Abram here, but Abram's probably doing the calculations in his head and going, okay, so what do I get? I don't get anything now? Like, you want me to do this crazy thing, and you're just going to say that someday you'll take care of me? Wow. I guess God wants me to trust him. Trust must be important. And we know that Abram did not just live for the present. Abram didn't just live for what was going to feel good in the moment, because if he did, he would have never left home. He would have stayed where he had everything, comfortable, just like you choose to stay comfortable unless life forces you out of it. And I think what Abram came to realize is that without God, he had no future. Remember? We talked about the fact that Abram has no children. Well, what does that mean in the ancient world and in today's world? Is that your branch of the family tree comes to an end with you. And you can have a very comfortable, happy life, but if there's no fruit on that tree branch, then it's not going to continue on into the next generation. And Abram was worried about that. He knew if he stayed home, his life, though comfortable, might end up in a dead end. And when he died, everything he had built would just pass away to whoever, and it wouldn't continue, and his name would vanish from the earth. But then this crazy God comes out of nowhere and says, hey, Abram, I've got some hope for your future. If you'll give me your present, Abram, I'll give you a future. And not just a future that you can't even imagine, an amazing future. But Abram, here's how it works. If you want this future, you got to give me your present. You got to step out into the darkness now. God is the God of the future. And it's a hard truth. But you got to know that before you sign up. There's going to be times where you wonder, what is the point? Nothing in my life is easier than it was before I stepped out. My life is actually harder now than it was when I was still comfortable back home. And God says, I know. But here's the deal. I've got a plan with you that stretches into the future, stretches even beyond your death into eternity. I've got a plan for you. And if you'll just trust me with this and keep walking right now, I'm going to take care of you. And at the end, you'll turn around and look back and you'll be so glad you did. Because this God is the one who's wise and he's powerful. He can actually do what he promises to do. One of the reasons I love Abram, and one of the reasons why I think Abram is sort of like a patron saint, so to speak, for people who are far from God today, who maybe have never been religious. If you're here and you're like, I've never been religious, this church thing is like not my deal. I've never really, or maybe I did when I was a kid and I'm not interested anymore. Abram is your guy. Because he didn't have a whole background to look at. He had God showing up and saying, hey, come on a journey with me. And he had to decide based on what he knew if he was going to do that or not. But in that first encounter, he figured out God is a God who recruits. He doesn't force you. He invites you and recruits you into a relationship. Secondly, God thinks he's in charge. So I better know that if I'm going to jump on board, I got to realize he believes he's in charge and I'm going to have to live on God's terms, not mine. And then thirdly, God focuses on the future. Signing on to God's plan might not pay off right away, but it's going to settle my future once and for all. And for Abram, and again, this blows my mind, knowing just those three things was enough for him to make the decision to step out into wild, reckless faith. It was enough for him. So as I close here, I just have a question for you to think about. And I hope it won't leave you alone all day. Is it enough for you to know this God that you're dealing with? Because here's the deal. You're free to choose whatever you want. You're free to step out. You're free to stay where you are. I'm not going to try to force you. And I don't think God is going to force your hand either. But if you choose to step out, you're going to get swept away on a wild ride into the unknown. And in that wild ride, God is going to be in charge. But here's the good news. He's going to walk with you. He's going to give you a life worth living today. And he's going to reward you in the future. And these rewards will dwarf any sacrifice you make in the present. For all of us, it gets really personal right about here. I believe God is calling every single one of us in some way or another to step out today. Are you ready? Let's pray. God, I know the stuff you're talking to me about. Stuff that makes me uncomfortable. Stuff that forces me to trust you. When I don't have anything in my hands right now to prove that this trust will be rewarded. And I have to fight through this right now, God, because I want to be the kind of person who trusts you enough to step out into the unknown. I want to be that kind of person. I want to follow Abram into the darkness. But I'm so afraid so much of the time. Please help me, God. Help me to be the kind of man who will do that willingly from my heart. Choosing to be God's partner and stepping out into that unknown so that my kids can see it and they can be like that, so that my family and friends here at this church can see that and step out and follow me out into the darkness. And God, I pray that we would be the kind of people who would live lives that are completely unexplainable except that you are the central driving force of our lives. I pray you'd help us to just step out in faith today, whatever it is you're asking us to do. And I ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.